What is going on, family? It's your boy, Low Daddy, back again with another episode of Teach Us Something Cool. Not Teach Us Something Cool, it's like a book club, but for learning cool shit. And we do this every single Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time over on Clubhouse. If you're not on Clubhouse and you need an invite, reach out to me by leaving a comment below on YouTube or on any of my social profiles. I'm more than happy to spread the wealth with you if I have any invites to give that week. So how it works is every week we have a new topic to learn and discuss set by our panel and the members of our community over on Discord. If you'd like to join our Discord to enhance your learning experience, I would encourage you to do so by clicking on the link tree in the description of any YouTube videos we have, in the description of our YouTube in general, or any of my social media profile bios. It's going to be in there as well. So you can do that for free. Definitely encourage you to do so. Hope to see you all there in the future, and I hope you enjoyed this week's conversation, which is going to be on whatever the title says below. And again, if you're on YouTube watching this, please, please, please smash that like button, smash, smash, so smash that subscribe button and ring the little bell next to it so you get notified every time we go live, every time we drop new videos and we're learning something cool up in here, which should be at least once a week moving forward. And I hope to get more consistent than that moving forward as well. But for now, enjoy this video and let me know what you think in the comment section below. So I'm recording on my end. This is your friendly reminder and disclaimer that this conversation, like all Wednesday conversations, is being recorded. It will be posted on YouTube. It will be posted on all major podcast platforms as well as of this past weekend. So we are on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, and there's like a list of like five or six others you can find us on now. Pretty dope shit. But this will be on there. So do not say anything that you do not want to appear on there. This is your one and only disclaimer for the rest of the conversation. Connor, do you want to get us started, or do you want to pick the topic we start with? I know we have a huge list.
I mean, you know what I want to talk about. There's a long road, but should we just stay on topic and talk about what's Privy and Tesla announcing that they're not accepting Bitcoin anymore because of fucking their green initiative, which nothing new has come out. Like, we know that Bitcoin burns energy. Like, that's not new. So I think we should kick that off.
For the people that didn't see it, Connor, would you mind giving us a little bit more background on what exactly happened?
Yeah, let me pull up the tweet. Basically, Elon initially has now backtracked on accepting Bitcoin in order to buy a Tesla. And he's saying that they're seeking greener initiatives, or a different coin, rather. Because it comes at a great cost to the environment. And given that they are a renewable or a clean energy company, they're staying that route. And they're not selling their Bitcoin, they're saying. Right. But he is moving away from it. And basically, he's opening up the floor to just accept Doge.
I don't know if that's what he's opening it up for. I mean, I maybe have some bias here, but I definitely think he's just trying to buy the dip to an extent. But, I mean, because it seems very hypocritical in the sense that, like, literally a couple of months ago, you can find old tweets. I'm trying to find one that I thought I liked earlier that was a tweet from Elon agreeing that Bitcoin incentivizes green energy transitioning because it's the most profitable way to mine Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So, I mean, it's hard for me to think that this is anything but him trying to manipulate the market and buy a little bit lower. And especially with Jamie Dimon coming out and saying something negative the same day. And then Vitalik, of course, nuking the Shiba coin and the Doggy coins, which we could maybe talk about after. But I don't know. It seems somewhat coordinated. Call me a conspiracy theorist.
No, so to back that up, I mean, I'm no expert on cryptocurrency whatsoever. But I'll tell you what, everything in Elon's statement was a lie, starting with Tesla is a green company. I mean, that's a lie, and he knows that. He's an intelligent man. Tesla is horrible for the environment, but he's riding this out because it's making him a lot of money. Same thing, every coin is high energy consuming to mine it. Just all of them are. So everything he said is motivated for putting money in his wallet.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's smarter than that. I mean, the whole Bitcoin uses energy thing is such a kind of like a lazy attack, but it's also the most like overwhelming mainstream attack on Bitcoin, right? Like that's the first thing people say in the mainstream media to attack it. But I think Elon's smarter than that, so I agree with you, Slater. Like I think he was just like under an overwhelming amount of like social pressure. I guess. I mean, we know Elon's not one to bend the knee to social pressure, but still, I mean, I also don't think that he's being nefarious and like trying to buy the dip or whatever. So it is. It's a very interesting move, and it was just a very. I don't know. It surprised me.
Yeah, I think you have a good point there with it likely just being motivated from a PR perspective rather than trying to accumulate more Bitcoin at a lower price. But it was suspicious the amount of FUD coming out on Bitcoin in a single day and the direct impact that had on the market. But yeah, I think I agree with you that he probably knows that it isn't necessarily actually a major problem for transitioning sustainability. But there is enough social pressure for people to or for him and that Bitcoin is easier.
And I know he's not like intellectually lazy. Like this argument has been debunked for years. I mean, 75% of Bitcoin mining is done from renewable energy, first of all. And second of all, the existing financial system uses a order of magnitude more energy than the Bitcoin system does currently. As well, Bitcoin, like the game theory behind it, incentivizes using clean energy just because of the low cost. So this is an argument that has been debunked, and it was kind of disappointing for Elon to use such a kind of weak and lazy argument. So I definitely think there's something deeper, but I just don't know what.
It's almost as bad as the cryptocurrency is only used for fraudulent and illegal activity. I was totally blown away, but I'm not surprised. I was talking to Slater before, and we both came to the same conclusion that he's driving the price down just to buy in. I personally think that all these billionaires are looking for ways to store their money, because if you guys have seen the inflation rates, they just came out 4.2%. You can literally, and I was telling this to Slater yesterday, and then I was listening to News this morning on Clubhouse, and it verified it. You could sell a Honda Civic that you bought 2 years ago for the same price today. That's a problem. That's a serious problem. So we're looking at some crazy stuff coming up here soon, and hopefully the financial analysts are correct and crypto is a store of value and a commodity during inflationary times.
Hey, Donald works in the cryptocurrency industry. Maybe you have some takes on what's going on in today's market and just the general, I guess, macro currently. And sorry, Travis, if you wanted to say something to it, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just going to make a comment about the Honda Civic, but let's get back onto it.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a director of product for a company called Hedera Hashgraph, which is a layer one proof of stake cryptocurrency. I'm also involved in a few other projects, but that's really my focus. I think that, you know, today is especially for those that of us that have kind of been in the space for a while, you know, pretty par for the course. And it's kind of a great reminder, frankly, of what motivation keeps me, at least, or others, I think, in the space. So I think first regarding kind of this discussion around renewable energies and mining, you know, there's two things which are equally true. One is that Bitcoin intentionally is a computationally intensive mining algorithm that incentivizes more compute, i.e. more energy being spent in operation of the system. And that's a feature, not a bad thing. It's what protects the security of the network. It's what makes the whole thing true. But someone also said, you know, up to, I think, like 77% of Bitcoin miners are, you know, fed by renewable energies, or at least, you know, offsetting their carbon expenditure by purchasing renewable energy credits. So on the whole, I think the system absolutely incentivizes greater renewable energy generation. I think what doesn't get talked about, though, is some of the work that's being done on top of these networks, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum,
I even put Hedera in that category, that are what's going to make this industry have legs beyond, you know, Elon and Vitalik doing meme things. You know, we have, like, you know, there's real financial institutions who are issuing, you know, securities on blockchains, on cryptocurrency networks. There's real companies beyond Tesla that are exploring not just how to, you know, buy a car with Bitcoin, but how to, you know, literally run entire financial markets on cryptocurrency networks. So that's the stuff that really excites me. I mean, that's what's going to give the space legs long term. I think the, you know, all of this to me is a distraction. You know, the one biggest topic that makes me most passionate about this space is actually around currency debasement for the United States dollar. So, for instance, if you look at who's been the most aggressive in terms of embracing cryptocurrency and distributed ledger technology, from a national security perspective, it's China. And they're doing so as a means to both issue their own sovereign currency on a blockchain and also incentivize application development, services development on blockchains they control. And that's an effort to replace the dollar. So while we're all here, you know, in the United States at least, messing around thinking about how or whether or not, you know, the regulators have given sanctions or what meme coin's going to go to the moon, you know, they're doing it as a means to replace the global financial system with the digital, you know, yuan. So anyways, just some random thoughts. Not sure if it's helpful, but happy to talk more about any of them.
Definitely helpful, definitely interesting, and I'm curious what you think about the U.S. also exploring a central bank digital currency, and if you think that central bank digital currencies are going to be direct competitors to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, or they're going to coexist in the future and both exist for the long term.
Sure. So I think the interesting thing that cryptocurrencies present is an opportunity to really separate out the values of money into a few different things. So typically money is defined as a medium of account, a unit of exchange, medium of exchange, unit of account, and store of value. I think someone mentioned earlier, but, you know, it's not very good to hold a dollar these days from an inflation perspective. It's, you know, so far long-term been a good thing to hold things like Bitcoin, ETH, and other cryptocurrencies. So I think you could start to see a world in the future where, you know, the dollar is really just the asset you go into and out of to, you know, pay things, to buy goods, to pay your taxes. But other things like cryptocurrencies are what actually present the long-term store of value. And that's kind of the two money world, if you will, that I think is going to emerge in the future. So in terms of what the U.S. is doing, you know, there's two really big initiatives. One is the Digital Dollar Project. It's led by some guys who were formerly of the, I believe it was the FDIC or the SEC, in partnership with MIT and Accenture. And then the other is the Future of Digital Currency Initiative out of Stanford. And so both of those are exploring how the U.S. could independently issue a cryptocurrency representing the U.S. dollar, i.e. backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. It wouldn't, I think, replace Bitcoin, but it would kind of be the counterparty in that two money world I mentioned, right, where you have Bitcoin and other Ethereums or Ethereum-esque tokens and then CBDCs. I think there's probably a third option, which is more embracing stablecoins, but that's a separate topic.
And then a quick room reset for people who are just joining right now. We're just kind of going over. We started with Tesla, with Elon coming out and saying that Tesla is no longer accepting Bitcoin as a form of payment as of like an hour or two ago. And then Don works within the crypto industry, actually on the front lines, is the director of product at what currency is it, Don?
The company's called Hedera Hashgraph. Our native token is called HBAR.
HBAR. Oh, Slater loves HBAR.
For good reason.
Yeah. So what does HBAR do again?
So we're what's called a proof-of-stake public cryptocurrency network. So this whole debate about energy is really about the what's called consensus algorithm that power these networks. So proof-of-work, which operates Bitcoin, today Ethereum is the really computationally intensive and energy consuming algorithm that everybody is talking about recently. Proof of stake algorithms are far more energy efficient. So they don't have you just use random compute power to solve an arbitrarily complex puzzle. So they're much better for the environment. That's what Ethereum is shifting to probably in the next 3 to 6 months. That's what Hedera is operating on today.
And would you say that you're a direct competitor to Ethereum, or how does your approach differ?
No, I mean, I'm very much of the mindset that there's going to be a multi-network world or a multi-cryptocurrency world where you see different use cases on different networks. So Ethereum is definitely going to be a mainstay for DeFi or decentralized finance applications now and in the long run. And other networks will provide different services. So Hedera, because of the transaction throughput and latency, is going to be great for payments, right? Being able to process 10,000 transactions per second is something that can sustain a Visa-size payments network. And that's really our focus, is working in some of those, you know, larger scale consumer and enterprise industries. So Google is one of our, you know, we call it a council member. They're essentially a part owner of our company. They operate part of our network. Other companies like LG, Boeing, IBM are in the same role. And some of the stuff that those organizations are building on cryptocurrency networks is pretty cool.
Hey, Don. So, you know, right now we're on a little bit of a downturn, and I've been in the space for a little bit. And, you know, people are freaking out, obviously, 12% Bitcoin down. But, like, a bear market in Bitcoin, it's usually 85% down, right? And with altcoins, when there's a bear market, it means that coins are down 97%. So I was looking for HBAR, couldn't pull it up. I should have just typed it in, but I figured I'd just ask you. Did you guys get, like, were you around before the 2018 crash? And then do you think that you guys, like, what's your plan for when it inevitably all goes down again? Like, are you going to be able to weather, like, obviously your answer is going to be yes, but what are you guys going to do to weather that storm when we inevitably hit rock bottom again?
Yeah, and I think just more generally, operating in the cryptocurrency space and your company in a way, not necessarily completely, but in a way indirectly valued by a token that's connected to you, how do you think about that within your strategy and surviving through those market cycles?
Hell yeah. So a few things. I think first, you know, how do you think about downturns as an investor or a token holder? And that's where, you know, you've got to both defend yourself from these events through diversification, but also through long-term thinking, right? Like if you're not overly concentrated in a single asset class, then it's a lot easier to tolerate things like a 25-30% dip in a given asset. And the beauty of cryptocurrency is opportunities for diversification are numerous, you know, let alone the stuff you could do outside of cryptocurrency. And second, if you set kind of a long-term investment horizon, you know, beyond just probably month dip, you know, you'll do just fine. In terms of Hedera, I think first and foremost, token price matters. It is certainly an indication of interest in the ecosystem and in usage, but it is by no means the only determinant of success for, you know, our network or any other network. So from our perspective, you know, we look at what we are seeing being built or actively already having been built on our network as what will give it the long-term lifespan as a core computing system, you know, in the future. And I really mean that, right? Like today, applications are run out of, you know, Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud Platform. In the future, all of them are going in some capacity to touch cryptocurrency and distributed ledger networks. So for us, we see things like, you know, Coupon Bureau. You've probably never heard of them, but they provide couponing for all U.S. retailers like Target and the like. They're building, you know, a solution for tracking the spending of coupons across retailers in the United States. That is a very meaningful, you know, application being built that isn't just going to disappear with a dip. So that's the type of stuff that, you know, certainly for us and for me is kind of most exciting. And even when stuff like this happens in the market is what gives legs, you know, for the industry as a whole long term.
And do you have any cash flow? Like, I know like a lot of these cryptos, they're kind of like startup-esque, or they just are straight up startups. How much? I know you said it's not going to impact it a whole lot. Your company at large is a whole lot, but how much will it drop, or a drastic drop in the market or in the price of your currency, impact the cash flow for your company?
That's not really a concern for impacting our operating expenses.
Okay.
Obviously, it's different based on how companies function. You do see some companies that are very actively, by necessity, selling tokens into the market as a means of sustaining revenue, but that's never really been something relevant for us.
Gotcha. Yeah, I imagine it probably is going to affect like the crypto mining companies that you're kind of starting to see come out, and some of them are going public right now too, but you know, they're being driven by the, you know, all-time high prices of Bitcoin and Ethereum. When the market crashes, they're going to lose a lot of their assets.
Yeah, I mean, or you'll see companies like Ripple, who, you know, very publicly got slap on the wrist from the SEC because they'd been, you know, constantly selling XRP as a means to sustain their business. And, you know, companies like mine didn't make that choice. And this is the benefit we get from that: much more stable business planning and much more durable business models.
Would you call Ripple and like Stellar Lumens competitors of yours?
I think certainly they're alternative layer ones. I think, you know, that they've made some different choices, I'll say, but yeah, they'd be considered competitors.
Gotcha.
Thanks for all the answers, Donald. I definitely want you to keep participating, but I also want to open it up a little bit to the rest of the floor. Just a general question to everybody about, I'm sure we're all aware of all of the meme coins that we're seeing in the market right now, all the clones and clones and clones of meme coins. Generally, do we think this is overall a net good for crypto? What are the pros and cons that are coming from this trend? And how do we think it ends up impacting the market?
I'll kick it off. Personally, I think the barrier to entry for these meme coins is so tough for a beginner that it won't even affect, like, they don't even know how to buy the coin in general. They can't get it on Binance or Coinbase or anything like that. They need to actively, you know, I don't even think there's YouTube tutorials on it that make quite much sense.
No, dude, I don't know. I would disagree with you there. I think there's an unhealthy, unsafe amount of very newbies on PancakeSwap.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't know about these, like, meme coins. I feel like maybe with the youths it'll work, but with the older people, it ain't flying, that's for sure. They don't understand this shit at all when it comes to swapping coins. Like, what the fuck does that mean to them? I don't think it's great. I think that Doge is bad for Bitcoin. I don't really want to elaborate on that much more because this is being recorded, but I don't think it's great. But I am invested in them because why not make a quick buck over a couple months? I'm a long-term crypto investor. I never do that stuff. But when I saw Shiba go up over like 2,000,000% from its birth, I was like, all right, might as well get into one of these coins.
I think you're
seeing... Anyone else buy SHIB? That's my first 30X.
I did not.
Fucking A. Congrats. I bought my first Dogecoin last night. I'm down 50%.
Sledge, what was the coin?
Like, look at all these stupid people making more money than me. Like, yeah. I'm just gonna do it.
Sledge, what was the coin you bought a couple weeks ago from that Sam dude?
Oh, Sam Pepper. that was just a fucking social media stunt. This kid Sam Pepper, who's like some washed up influence. It like must have been my first YouTube influencer ever from like 2008 or some shit. And he's like 35 or something now. And he's like trying to make a comeback, I guess. And was just like seeing everyone make loads of money on crypto by just pumping stuff. So he used what was left of his influence to like just absolutely bombard Twitter with like, I'm pumping an altcoin in the next 5 minutes. Like, get here. And I just saw him and I was like, what the hell? Like, and I enjoy the speculation. Like, yeah, maybe it's overall, like, I mean, a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money, like, bottom line. And some people are going to make a lot of money, which is good, too. But, I mean, to speculate, I mean, that's how I get my rocks off, really. Like, I'm not a sports bettor. Like, I believe in Bitcoin for the long term. Like, I think it's going to become the global reserve currency. But I also, you know, enjoy gambling a little bit. So that's why I buy the smaller coins. I hope people, and, like, that's how you get into crypto, you know? I feel like for a lot of people, that's how you are introduced to it, is like the gains, you know. You see the 10x's that have happened, you know, three times predictably every 4 years, and you see that and you're like, holy crap. Like, and it's the hook. It's what gets you in, at least for me, and I know for a lot of people. And then you start to, like, I mean, you're invested in it, so, like, you have a incentive to, like, actually learn about it. So, like, once you learn about it, you're like, oh shit, like, this is about to eat the world. And, you know, hopefully you get to that point before you get wrecked. But I mean, that's the thing that I would emphasize to the newbies, the normies that are joining and seeing the gains and the dog coins and stuff. It's like, yeah, making money is cool, but you know what's cooler is burning it the fuck down, is like channeling that Wall Street Bets energy and just having, like, the system. Like, we can all agree that the system's fucked, at least the financial and the money system especially. And it's like, there's no political solution. Like, we're not going to fix the old system. Like, we have to build a new system. And that's what Bitcoin's trying to do. And that's, you know, that's the long-term game. That's the most, that's more fun, in my opinion, than the aping and into meme coins and the 10Xs and stuff.
Yeah, Sledge is a must follow, by the way, on Snapchat. He, you know, cracks me the fuck up with his cryptocurrency sit. He also, him and Matt on stage, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, they led the cryptocurrency club at UT Austin together back in 2017, 2018, during that bull rush. So, you know, definitely guys who have been in the game for just as long as most of us up here. Very knowledgeable on the topic as well, have been for a long time. What you said about the gambler mentality, Sledge, is something I'm glad you brought up, because that's what we're seeing shift from the stock market. That's where Robinhood kind of created, you know, or brought gamblers into the stock market, where you can throw $100 on Tesla instead of throwing $100 on, you know, your favorite team, and you can watch it run that way, and you can see the gains and how they happen. It's, I mean, I find the stock market way more exciting than gambling. That's why I stopped gambling. So, you know, it introduced gamblers to a whole different way to make money. But then you started to see plays like GameStop. And for so long, people were obsessing on Reddit about finding the next GameStop and not realizing that they're investing in very shitty companies that aren't really worth anything, other than the off chance that they're going to be the next big short squeeze that somehow comes right after the GameStop short squeeze. Spoiler alert, didn't happen. Then you have the penny stocks. You have people become millionaires on penny stocks. And just as quick as some of them made millions, you know, they lost millions. And it's unfortunate that it works out that way. But that's when the stock market stopped being fun for these people. It's like it used to be fun. It used to be a game, and it's no longer a game. It's kind of turning into the stock market how it used to be, or how it typically is. And now you're seeing those same people shift over to cryptocurrency in this market, because the market's running now and it's fun. And you're starting to see these shit coins like Dogecoin, Shiba Inu, make people a shit ton of money with actually no value at all to them. And it's becoming a game again. And so I don't know if it's good for the market. And I think in the short term it is. I think it's pumping Ethereum, because in order to get a lot of these coins, you have to convert, you have to swap them with Ethereum. So we saw our Ethereum network get flooded over the weekend, which is why I think it pushed us over 4K finally, which is awesome to see. But, you know, a lot of these people are going to get crushed as well, that don't know any better, because they haven't been a part of this market before.
Yeah, that's awesome. Seeing, like, the because I didn't think the Fed was going to turn the stock market into a casino, but they really have. I mean, even stocks, like, we talk about meme coins and shit, but the fucking stock market is driven by memes too now. I mean, it seems like it's not driven by fundamentals, that's for sure. So I see all my, like, friends, like, trading stocks just based on memes and just fucking jokes, GameStop and AMC and shit. But pound for pound, crypto is a way better casino than the stock market in terms of, you know, the openness and the transparency and the just ability to, like, you use a VPN, you can trade whatever asset you want in the world. Like, I mean, pound for pound, like we'll take all the gamblers. I mean, this is speaking from a strictly speculative point of view, but yeah, pound for, like, I have friends that just have completely dumped the stock market just because it's just not as fun as crypto.
Yeah, I mean, the stock market casino is canceled until further notice as well, which I kind of like because I am a fundamentalist, but you know, it was fun to be a part of, at least. You know, you saw people becoming millionaires that, you know, typically wouldn't have become millionaires, you know, trading the companies that they were.
Okay, I'd like to make two more comments to kind of wrap things up and, like, push the conversation further. But, I mean, to answer the initial question of whether or not altcoins and things like Dogecoin are good for the market, and then, two, I think Preston and Mike, you proposed the idea that it's far more like betting than opposed to actual investing. I have two comments to make. One, altcoins and Dogecoins, as Preston kind of suggested in the story, are great because you get people like influencers and these success stories to introduce people and kind of bring them to the market. And then two, to kind of respond to the whole, you know, what you see people betting, you know, I think that is just like the nature of a very young and a very undeveloped market. All right, and I think that's kind of a consequence of it. So to answer the question, yes, these altcoins, these other things that are bringing people to the market are good, right? It's just about how does the market adapt. And then, two, I don't think it's a betting market. I just think it's a young market that is undeveloped.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that as well. I think it's a young market that is undeveloped, and I think that them getting exposure to this market, I think these people getting exposure to the stock market as well, is a really good thing. I think, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to get a sour taste in their mouth, and it's going to discourage them from investing in the future, because they're going to, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who get burned. I've been seeing it already, and you know, the ones who kind of persevere through that, I think people, the lessons they need to learn when they play the stock market or crypto is, one, I'd love to see them make money as quickly as possible. Learn what it feels like to make a shit ton of money, because it feels way better than gambling. Then, two, I think they need to lose that money as quickly as possible as well, and learn what it feels like and it tastes like to lose the money that you just thought you made, that you didn't realize as gains, or maybe you did and you've rolled it over into another investment, bad investment, you lost it all. I think that needs to happen quick, and the quicker that those two can happen, you know, people are going to either be incentivized to, one, not play the market anymore, or not think of it like a casino, and then two, you're going to see people who want to just kind of hunker down, and they're like, winning tasted fucking sweet. I want to learn how to win and not lose, and, you know, do everything in my power to make sure I don't make those bad investments again, to make sure I invest in strong things that are going to be around 5, 10, 50 years from now, because that's going to make me a shit ton of money if I can find those plays.
And I agree, it's a new market, but it's just so different even from the dot-com boom, in the fact that there is little to no barriers to entry to start trading crypto. Like, even in the internet boom, like, you had like VCs kind of running the show, you had to know people. With crypto, anyone with an internet connection can trade any crypto that they want. I mean, if Robin, you know, like right now, it's like that with Robinhood. Like, it's gonna kind of democratize like stock investing or whatever. Like, everyone and their mom has Robinhood on their phone now. We can just long and short shit on leverage from our phones. But like, crypto's been like that since the beginning, and it's just it's unique asset bubble, or like, you know, new movement, technological revolution, whatever. It's unique in that it started with retail. And like, it originated from retail, and institutions are late to the game, or they're at least later than retail. And so that's been just like super interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think you're touching on something important, which is the fact that is really gonna accelerate the future crypto market cycles, including hopefully this one. Before, it's always been retail on top of retail in crypto, with an institutional investor here and there, but mostly people that just got very rich early on in crypto and kept reinvesting in new projects. But now we're seeing retail drive the market up, and really institutions starting to FOMO in after that, which, I mean, is much more of the general liquidity in usual markets. So, I mean, I think that's a sign that we're still early in this market, and to connect it back to the Dogecoin thing and all the meme coins, I think the other really concerning thing is more and more institutions and funds are basing their trades off of momentum and social media. And it's really making me think that as much as I would like to see the market normalize and go back to looking for projects that are providing value, that this meme coin trend may continue for a while, and we might just kind of be at the beginning of a couple month long cycle. I don't know, though. We'll see how it plays.
Yeah, cool.
But ultimately, to finish that thought, I do think that is going to end up being a net good for the industry, just because, kind of like Preston said earlier, you get in for the gains, but you stay for the technology and how you feel like it's going to eat the world. And anything that you can do to get more people hooked is, I think, a good in the end.
Just a cool little sidebar on that, like, meme-driven market, which is totally true and kind of funny. I mean, meme-driven market. But there's huge money going into web scraping companies that they scrape social media and they try to see, oh, interesting, you know, Dogecoin is the most talked about coin today. Oh, but yesterday it was this one. You know, what's the market doing? But there's huge money going into companies that are scraping and trying to quantify the energy on social media about coins, because Slater's right. That's exactly how it's driven right now, and that's kind of weird to think about.
I think it's hilarious, too. I was looking at CoinMarketCap today, and Connor actually sent a good link in the Discord and links and resources of, one, what the market looked like in January 2018, what the top 10 coins were, and, you know, there's a handful of them that aren't around anymore. So that's something you got to be watching out for, too. But I looked at CoinMarketCap today, and you can sort it by categories, and one of the categories now is just memes. So, like, what are the meme coins right now? What's their current market cap? What's their current price? And, you know, everyone's going for the one with the most zeros on it. So, you know, it's insane to see at this point.
Yeah, and I can almost see it becoming a trend where as new memes become popular, someone creates a coin for it, the price drives up, and it almost becomes a new form of, like, social media-driven gambling.
Yeah, it's a matter of who can find it first and can you get in early enough to be a part of the run-up. That's the challenge. Or do you jump on too late where, like, you're buying the very top of Shiba coin, for example. I don't know where the top is or if it's already topped out, but if you buy the top of that, well, there's going to be a very low likelihood that it's ever going to reach that peak again if there's no actual value to the coin.
Yeah. It blows my mind that people don't look at the market capitalization. Like, Shiba coin, it's like, I think, 100 quintillion or quadrillion is supply.
Max supply.
Yeah, I'm going into the math here. It'll never hit a dollar, ever. Yeah. Ever. Like, all you have to do is do the basic math with the max supply and then the current price, and then you get your market cap. And, like, these people are nuts. I don't know, but I did it too. I aped a bunch of fucking money into Hawk. So, and it went down just like Sledge 50% the day after, which was great. But, you know, we're not selling. That's why I love this casino, because I had a habit of leaving everything on the table at a casino. Loved craps. Now I put everything into cryptocurrency, and if I leave everything on the table in a year or two, it goes right back up. It's incredible. It's my favorite thing in the world. And, you know, I hardly gamble anymore. But when I do, but this has definitely filled that void, and I think it's helping a lot of people if they don't sell. The key is just not selling.
And it's a matter of finding the good things to hold and not sell. That was, you know, the reason I've been very hesitant and cautious with altcoins this time around is because I did get burned in 2018. You know, listening to people on Reddit talking about what the next great big altcoin is and how this is going to become the next Bitcoin and yada, 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 yada. There are those coins that I invested in that did go to zero. You can, like, imagine that meme of, like, the guy yelling, "It's going to zero." It actually went to zero and it's not worth anything anymore. So you got to find the good ones.
Like, what is the psychology behind buying a meme coin? Because, like, people generally buy stocks or buy assets to make money, right? Like, when someone buys a dog coin, are they expecting to make money, or are they doing it to have fun, or like, or are they legit expecting to make, like, seeing their friends make money or hearing about people making money, and, like, that's their impetus to, like, buy it? Like, if anyone in here is, like, kind of a newbie and, like, has bought a dog coin, like, why did you buy?
I'm like, I'm kind of a newbie on this all. I bought into Doge after I heard Mark Cuban, you know, had his foot in it with, being able to buy and sell Mavericks tickets with it. So that kind of gauged my interest.
I think it kind of goes hand in hand with the greater trend, though, of just the world starting to assign monetary value to things that are culturally important. And we see it in NFTs, and now we're starting to see it in just manifestations of memes as cryptocurrencies. And I think we're going to continue to see it in different ways, just because that is so much of what's important to the world today, is what's going on in social media, what's popular, what's happening.
All right, so I think something that is super prevalent is the dominance of Bitcoin. I've been looking into it deep. And if anybody else has anything to add on that previous topic, we don't have to move on, but I figured we could jump into something else if you guys are down.
I might actually have a good segue for you, Connor. So we've talked about the meme coins, everything going up, going down, and Lo has talked about the fallout of 2018. And I guess this kind of can segue into your Bitcoin discussion. So explain to me, obviously the market goes in cycles, ups and downs, seasonal, cyclical, wherever they may be. But explain to me the difference between traditional market cycling and crypto cycling. And then I guess you can kind of weave Bitcoin into that and go from there.
When the Bitcoin and the Ethereum markets run, they run fucking hard. Like, they run way harder than the stock market. It's actually sick. I don't know how many cycles that can continue for, but it is. It runs way harder than the stock market.
Yeah, and I think that attributes mostly to, but Ishaq brought it up. It's a new market. Wall Street didn't exist. Imagine you're on your town square in 1920 and some asshole walks up to you with a piece of paper and says, "This is Ford Motor Company stock. It's worth 4 cents. You want it?" And then you buy a bunch and now you just got this paper, right? And there's not a lot of money in the market. I think that's the equivalent of what we're running up against right now. And that's why there's so much movement in price. And like I said earlier, Bitcoin bear markets, they happen and 85% of the value is taken away. Altcoin bear markets, 97% of the value is taken away. So you have those pendulum swings. What's going to happen with every traditional market? It goes up over time. So it needs to get past those losses and it blows the ceiling off of everything. That's my explanation.
I think you're right in that. What Ejok said, it's an early market and, like, a technological revolution, quite literally, so it's going to be volatile on the way up. I also think there's something to be said about the Bitcoin halvings, because every 4 years, the inflation rate of Bitcoin is effectively cut in half, so, like, it becomes two times scarcer, pretty much. So that is usually, like, if you go back in time, that's really what has kickstarted these past four bull runs of Bitcoin. It predictably pops the fuck off every 4 years right after the halving. But also, there's this theory that's been floating around the crypto space, and some big brains have been subscribing to it, so it's kind of got some credence, and they're calling it the super cycle. And their theory is, like, the theory is pretty much, like, if you go to Amazon in the late 90s and early 2000s, like, it was just as volatile as Bitcoin is now. Just up crazy amounts, down, you know, almost all the way, but a higher low. And just, like, it had a couple of just, like, bubbles. We would call them bubbles. But in 2001, it really cemented itself. And then after that, it just entered into this fucking decade-long up only, not quite as volatile, but just reliably up. For the last 10 years, like, people get it for, like, their Amazon stock for their graduate. I mean, it's like a store of value, pretty much. So that's where this super cycle thesis comes from, is, like, yeah, like new assets are volatile, but the thinking is that after this cycle or during this cycle, like Bitcoin's going to cement itself into the collective mind and just enter this like decade long, like what we've seen Amazon doing for the past 10 years. And I think it depends a lot on macro and like political circumstances, but it's just an interesting theory. And I mean, obviously interesting for someone who's holding it. But, yeah, so that's a super cycle theory.
I think I'd add maybe just two things to this that are a bit more unique to crypto and will likely be longer term than just the initial kind of hype cycle. First is that these markets are inherently 24/7 and global, which means that you see, you know, really massive inflows of capital into different asset classes. You occasionally see things like the Korean premium on Bitcoin emerging in one region, which are kind of oddities. But anytime you see such large global markets, you generally see really compressed cycles. The second nature of the industry is that if you think about what made the first or second wave of kind of that, not the dot-com bubble, but let's call it like that early to mid 2000 era, is there was a lot of copycat products, right? You saw MySpace, then you saw Facebook, then you saw whatever that thing Google launched that was trying to compete with Facebook. Crypto is that times 100. So you see projects doing what's called forking another project, which is essentially taking the software that was used to create something, renaming it, and launching it as your own. And it's completely legal. It's completely kosher. So an example would be SushiSwap, which essentially forked another project called Uniswap, and within a matter of weeks had over like $1 billion or some absurd amount of money in their product. And that's not a meme coin. That's a very real application that has very meaningful value for the industry and for, you know, people using it.
So yeah, real quick, shout out SushiSwap, whoever did it. Uniswap.com now reroutes to SushiSwap. Genius play.
Yeah, so you see stuff like that, which really compresses the innovation cycle in building, so that you've got, you know, a small window to actually prove that your project has legs, and if not, somebody will fork it and beat you. And so that also, you know, leads to some of that greater volatility, especially for earlier stage projects.
And where does PancakeSwap fall in there?
It's essentially the same, but on a different network. So most projects over the last year and a half were deployed to Ethereum. What's caused or what's resulted from, you know, companies like Hedera, Solana, you know, Binance Smart Chain, Flow, all these other projects occurring is that those same projects are being rebuilt on different networks. So that's what's kind of cool about the space, right? You have Bitcoin, which is essentially the, you know, crypto reserve asset, right? Crypto gold. Nobody really wants it for payments anymore. You have Ethereum, which was kind of the first child of Bitcoin, you know, that created all of this cool growth, this whole new economy. And now there's, you know, 7, 10, 12 Ethereum equivalents that are spinning up and gaining their real traction as well. So you're seeing, you know, a lot more opportunity and a lot more growth.
Yeah, I want to add on some numbers to that for people that might not be as deep in the crypto space just to understand the significance of a lot of these newer platforms such as Hedera and Solana and I guess even kind of Binance Smart Chain. But one of the big problems with Ethereum is, Donald, I actually don't know off the top of my head, I'm sure someone here does, but how many transactions can Ethereum process per second?
30.
12, yeah, so it's a difference of 12 to about 10,000 in a project like Hedera. And I think Solana is another test, and I got up like 50,000, which is another insane one. So those are all coins that I'm very bullish on because I think a lot of these DeFi projects require relatively frequent transactions and becomes a huge pain in the ass when you have to pay $50 to $200 per transaction for fees.
$300, brother. Today I had $300 to $400.
Right. Whereas these new platforms, I mean, they might not have the decentralization or the longevity that Ethereum has already shown. But, I mean, once you're talking 10,000 transactions per second to 12 and a cost of, like, a cent versus or less than a cent versus $200. I mean, I think there's a massive bull case for both. I do think Ethereum will stick around.
That's where Ethereum 2.0 is. It's aiming to alleviate those pain points, right? Where it's the big concerns, the big complaints you get are always going to be transaction speed or transactions per second, gas fees, because it's super expensive to run the network right now. I'm drawing a blank now on the other knocks that Ethereum gets, but that's what 2.0 is aiming to alleviate. So that's
still, I think even 2.0, what are the numbers behind it? I don't think it's...
I couldn't tell you the Ethereum 2.0 numbers. Don might have a better idea than I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a meaningful improvement, right? It's going to move to probably a few thousand transactions per second and substantially improve transaction fees. So I think the thing to be thinking about if you're wanting exposure in a lot of these different tokens, you know, Uniswap, SushiSwap versus PancakeSwap, one of the big debates in the space right now is that a lot of these projects like Solana or Binance Smart Chain have merged because big whales on Ethereum sought yield through these other products on different networks. And so the question is whether they'll kind of come home, if you will, if Ethereum does a successful migration to ETH 2.0. So you could actually see liquidity start to dry up in some of these quick risers from the past few months. So it's an interesting thing to think about if you're, you know, invested in the space.
Cardano is one of the plays, right?
Definitely.
Not to FUD Ethereum or anything. Yeah, I'm going to FUD Ethereum. So ETH 2.0 has been in the works for, I think, years now. They've pushed back the launch date on that. I think they have been for years. It's kind of like an urban legend, ETH 2.0. And it's really, I mean, it's always been a meme of, like, you know, Ethereum competitors. Like, everyone just kind of assumed that they're irrelevant. But, I mean, it's gotten to the point where Ethereum is unusable for a lot of people. The whales, like, they don't have a problem paying high transaction fees. But for me, I mean, I tried to make a swap on Uniswap, which is on Ethereum, 2 days ago. And it tried to charge me $150 to make one swap, to do one transaction on Ethereum. $150. And
even through MetaMask, dude. Today it was $300. Last night it was $400.
Yeah, that's
ridiculous.
And that's the big bet I was referring to, right? Are they going to do it successfully? It is absolutely happening in the next 3 to 6 months. You know, they took a long time to do it, but I would argue that's kind of for good reason and decentralization. But that's the big bet. You know, will they execute that switch successfully?
I mean, a lot is riding on that. And just that, you know, $150 transaction, that's worse than the banking system. Like, we've lost the plot.
Yeah.
If you can go around.
The other thing you just have to keep in mind, though, especially with, you know, networks like Binance Smart Chain, that those are run by, like, a single company. And so you can still see outages on some of those new networks that, you know, take away all your money. I'll just put it that way. So that's where there's risk as well, even when you're thinking about kind of other networks and other tokens on different networks.
I agree. But I also think that people don't care about decentralization as much as they think or say they do.
Right. They don't care until it breaks and then you're.
Yeah. Until they have to. But I just think that's, you know, part of the short term drainage of Ethereum into their competitors is like, yeah, people don't. I mean, a lot of these people that we're talking about are, you know, new people coming in. They don't give a shit really about decentralization. Like, they care about how usable whatever they're using is. And so, I mean, Ethereum being unusable now is kind of drawing people to other chains. But I do agree, they don't care about it until they have to, you know, until they, you know, get screwed or a black swan event happens. But, yeah.
And Sledge, if you could go around, like, I would commission it, I think, for you to go around Clubhouse and thud Ethereum everywhere. Because if you give me an opportunity to buy Ethereum for $200 a pop again, I am going to take out a home equity line of credit against my parents' house and buy all the $200 Ethereum I can get.
One of my favorite things to do is fud Ethereum. As bad as Bitcoin maximalists are, as cringe as Bitcoin maximalists are, Ethereum maximalists are two times as cringe.
Ever since they did that badger dance.
Oh my god, Vitalik dancing on stage. I wanted to jump out of, that was worse than SNL. I wanted to jump out of window when I saw that.
I definitely love Ethereum. I'm a big, big Ethereum bull. You know, one of my buddies, Amon in the crowd, we were talking a few months back, actually, before this huge run happened, about the possibility, and I think it's Chainlink, and there might be one or two others who are aiming to do this, trading derivatives on Ethereum's blockchain. You know, that would add, you know, potentially billions of dollars of transactions going through Ethereum's blockchain every single day. So, you know, the more of these projects that are built on Ethereum, that's what's really going to fuel the growth, is just having all these transactions fueled on different blockchains happening on Ethereum's blockchain, at least how I see it. But it needs to be more. It needs to be more usable. It can't be in the current state that it is today. No one's going to pay $400 a transaction. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, I want to. I agree with you. Yeah, I want to go back to ask Donald a little bit though. In a world where Ethereum does figure out its scaling issues, do you still think there? Or I guess, what are the other values that alternative blockchains can still provide if Ethereum can scale properly and the fees aren't out of control, that can be maybe more focused towards one niche or another?
Yeah, that's really what's going to drive it. You know what? So maybe to take a step back, I think of the whole space here in the context of network effects, right? You have common applications, common users trying to do a similar thing in a similar place, and that gives that place more value, right? So having, you know, all of the taxi drivers on a single application gives you Uber. Having all of the Airbnb rentals on Airbnb gives you, you know, a hotel platform. The same thing is going to occur in the context of cryptocurrency and distributed ledger networks, where you see DeFi, you know, coalescing around Ethereum. But other networks are doing a lot of stuff well also. So I mentioned, you know, what we're doing at Hedera in the context of payments, in retail, in the sustainability space, in some of those more mature regulated financial markets. Other good examples would be Flow. So many of you, I'm sure, heard about NBA Top Shot. This is the team that also built CryptoKitties. They launched their own blockchain called Flow. That's what's being used now by the NBA and a bunch of other cool consumer brands for NFT trading. You see Solana doing a lot of cool stuff around, you know, financial markets and financial exchange. And so that's really where you'll see those separate, who are just kind of Ethereum mirrors that don't actually add much value, and those who have a unique value in a unique industry.
What was the one for NBA Top Shot really quick?
It's called Flow, F-L-O-W.
TK, that's all you, baby.
It's called Waste of Money.
Tommy, whoa. Tommy is an early adopter of NBA Top Shot, and while the market is down right now, he's confident it will recover.
Yeah, I love NBA Top Shot. I'm sure you do, Mark. Dude, the first week I was on there, I was like, I mean, I probably won't make any money, but I'll buy two packs for like $18. Just sold these random moments, listed whatever price you want. I come back a few days later and I've already made like $600. I'm like, what?
Do we have to get into these stupid NFTs already? Jesus.
I'll allow it if it's Tommy. Tommy, it's the one. He doesn't know much about crypto, but he's my go-to NFT guy.
Can you actually make money in NFTs?
I just didn't have to do a thing. And I had $600 that people paid me in my account, $700, for doing nothing. I spent 18.
Thoughts on Safecoins? On Safecoins?
I'm going to send some people to the crowd really quick, just because I can't see who's talking anymore. If you have anything you want to say ever, ask a question, obviously just raise your hand and we'll call you back up here, no problem.
And FYI, collection is worth more than TK's for NBA. Just saying.
All right. Well,
TK, we're lobbing this up to you, man. You asked, we provided, and you're just leaving us hanging. We want to hear about the notorious NFT craze, baby. Let's go.
Dude, don't get me started on NFTs.
We're getting you started on it.
Dude, honestly, I'm not a fan.
but I did buy into Top Shot early on. My friend told me it's going to be the next big thing, and I was like, all right, whatever. And like right away, I was pretty skeptical because I was like, dude, I could watch Damian Lillard make a three-pointer on YouTube for free. Why would I want it on a website? And so anyways, yeah, there was a point in time where it was really sick, but I held a little too long. And mine is now not worth nearly as much. But yeah, I mean, what Lax is saying is true. I literally did nothing except stare at NBA highlights that are like 5 seconds long. And then people were paying like hundreds and thousands for them. So that was pretty sick.
I'm holding on to it's the first one moment that was made for LaMelo Ball. And it's also his first career assist. I have his NFT for that. At the highest it was going for at like its peak was like 7 to 8K minimum, and I had a lower
and
steal
you didn't
number.
Know?
No, because I thought I know he's gonna win Rookie of the Year and I'm gonna wait. But people are still it's still worth like at least 3 to 4K I fucked up.
That's a long term hold.
Alright, long term for sure.
All right, let's segue
really
back.
People are into NFTs like that. LaMelo Ball will no longer be a household name. So that's it.
Dude, he's about to win Rookie of the Year. I was waiting for that award accomplishment right there.
Yeah, like, I have a Larry Nance layup. It's not even a dunk. And, I mean, I can't even sell it for $10.
Sell that, too.
I'm trying so hard.
ZK always complains he can't sell them.
And put it into VeChain. And I think this is a wonderful time to segue into VeChain, the greatest cryptocurrency in the history of crypto.
That's concur.
Agreed with I mean, it's fine and all, but it's the greatest crypto in the history.
I don't believe it.
Partnered with the greatest car company in the history of car companies, BMW. We're going to the moon, my friends. It's got real use case. I'll tell you a little bit about VeChain if you don't know about it for the people in the crowd. It's basically a notary of things. It keeps track of the supply chain, okay? Mike, you want to run our prime example of VeChain in action on the supply chain, and then we can run over why it's one of the most undervalued coins on the entire market. By looking at its market capitalization and max and total supply.
I'm down for everybody to get bull cases for stuff, but I don't know.
Washed up.
We sat through a 10-year.
Connor, I don't want to hear about your largest investment.
VeChain actually is fucking sick. VeChain is sick. There's a couple, like two examples I love to give for real world problems that I think that it's solving. Well, it's currently solving. One is counterfeiting, right? So, like Connor said, it's a notary of things, so it's going to track everything on their blockchain from the moment of a product's conception to the moment that it enters your hands and the next person's hands and so on and so on and so on, every step of the supply chain, though. So like for BMWs, we know when one of their cars has an issue, you need to repair it, they need specific parts. And those parts cost a lot of money compared to the typical car part. So if you say, for example, pay $3,000 for a repair for a part that you think you're getting put in your BMW and it turns out to be a counterfeit part somehow, some way, it breaks on you a month later because you find out, it was like a $300 part, nothing you can do now. It prevents something like that happening, or just counterfeiting in general. Like it was created by the founder of, or the ex-CEO of Louis Vuitton China. So basically when it's made at the OEM, that's logged in the blockchain. When it enters the truck, that's logged in the blockchain. When it enters the warehouse facility, that's logged in the blockchain, so on, so on, so on, until it gets to the mechanic shop and then eventually enters your car. So you can always guarantee that you're getting an authentic product. You're not going to get something counterfeit or something that's less than what you paid for. The other use case is in groceries specifically. So Walmart China is another one of their partners. Now, this is, I know, a problem because one of my older friends, he's like 50-something years old, he worked in blockchain for 20-plus years. He's got friends specifically in the grocery sector where we're accepting deliveries. Like, sometimes they'll just deny delivery altogether because they're not sure if it was kept, if products were kept in the right conditions. Like lettuce needs to be kept in a certain temperature range. So what VeChain allows them to do with their solution is allows them to track certain products with their certain temperature ranges. And if they're ever outside of that temperature range, it will document it on the blockchain so they can refuse that that product before it ever enters their store, because worst case scenario, it does. When something like this doesn't exist, you get salmonella. They have to figure out where this contamination happened, if it was the lettuce, if it was certain products. They start pulling products off the shelves. It's a whole thing where they have to be reactive in that situation. This allows them to be proactive, where they can deny shipments knowing for sure it was kept outside of its needed range for it to remain uncontaminated, and basically be proactive in the situation now with their supply chain.
Yeah, to be completely fair, I'm in the same boat where I didn't want to hear about it either, but from manufacturing, quality control, and like traceability, accountability, corporate accountability standpoint, it improves everything tenfold compared to what it is now. I mean, it's remarkable, and it's, I'm going to say, no bias here, completely and totally a matter of time. It's five
to 15 years, and it's completely adopted. Think about if it makes it in pharmaceutical manufacturing. You got to know the origin of every single chemical that goes into, let's use relevance here, the COVID vaccine, the origin of every single chemical. You're going to find out all of the conditions about it, just like Mike said. I mean, it's remarkable, and it's all digitally stored within one location.
I guess one part that confuses me a little bit, I see how it could be viable for the agricultural supply chain and a lot of perishable products in general, but isn't the technology just using an RFID chip to track certain data points that need to be tracked? Isn't it relatively limited, is my point, to what it actually can track and record on the blockchain to temperature and maybe a couple of other conditions?
That would be like for one use case, right? That's where the RFIDs come into play. But they've got.
I heard another. What's the?
So with, for example, like Salesforce is a partner, right? VeChain has a blockchain as a service software where they can basically, like Salesforce already integrated with their systems, and they're basically finding use cases for their customers because Salesforce has every Fortune 500 company in the world as their customer base, and they know how these companies operate as well. So they're finding, I mean, that's what they do already to begin with, is set up unique setups for these companies. That's what the Salesforce goes in and does. They're basically figuring out how they can use VeChain's blockchain to make these companies' processes more efficient, and integrating it with the Salesforce CRM simultaneously as well. So I don't... Go ahead.
Sounds like a lot of marketing. Now, you didn't tell me any actual use case in this sentence, just that Salesforce is trying to find use cases.
VeChain is washed up, Mike. It's a 2017 coin. Blockchain for supply chain is the most bogus, like, sales pitch that's been going on since the beginning of time. One, I don't think you need a blockchain. Like, it doesn't need to be decentralized, all right? Like, the person who's scanning the RFID chips and, like, is checking the temperatures, like, you still got to trust him. There's no verifying him. He's still the one inputting the data. Like, you're still trusting all these trusted points that you still have throughout the supply chain. And to think that people are going to use a public chain like VeChain to accomplish that, when they can just build their own blockchain between each other. A blockchain is just a shared database. When they can just share databases between each other, I don't understand why they would use a public blockchain like VeChain to do that. And I mean, that's exactly what Sater said. It's all like, unless they're actually building and adopting this shit, those companies that you mentioned, that is all marketing. Like, it is so easy to get a partnership with a company like that, that unless they're actually seeing usage and adoption of their chain, like that is your only saving grace when it comes to VeChain.
I love this.
And let it be known that I hold a large bag of VeChain. I think it will pump again, and it's had one of the greatest pumps this year of any coin. But I think in reality, if we're looking at the value being created here, it's extremely minimal compared to some of the other technologies coming out in the market.
I love this because Connor and I are obviously bulls, and I hate fucking sitting in echo chambers where it's just your own thoughts. I love hearing an opposing point of view. So thank you, Slater and Sledge. I disagree. People are using it currently. but only time will tell if it's if it gets as adopted as I believe it's going to be adopted.
I disagree as well. You know, you bring up fantastic points, but, you know, sometimes the easiest to implement are the first market, and we see that with Bitcoin, and a lot of these partners do use their products. And specifically in China, it gives the Chinese government more control, and that's all they yearn for, is more control. And if the CCP, non-endorsement of the Chinese Communist Party at all, but if, and they have, so when they start fully pushing VeChain, people will fall in line within that country, and then you have a number of other different avenues, like the partnership with Salesforce. You know, that's basically a CRM for them of leads to get other businesses on board. Slater told me about VeChain actually 7 years ago when it was called VEN.
Back when I was a noob.
Back when he was a noob, and we both thought we knew everything about everything when it came to crypto. He was an idiot and sold, but
I also got a disclaimer here that Connor has outperformed the shit out of me this year solely by holding VeChain. So I mean,
VeChain,
but I still stick to values. Actually,
no, I get it.
And I always say that I'm an unbiased party when it comes to VeChain. Totally biased party. It's definitely done me super well, and I'm deep in the YouTube videos all the time, just pumping my own ego about VeChain. And I like it. I like the coin.
Any thoughts on SafeMoon?
On what?
SafeMoon?
It's a scam.
Get your money out. Slater loves that coin.
I own SafeMoon, and it's definitely a scam. But I own a lot of scam coins as well.
It might pump like crazy. I own a lot of scam coins right now too. But yeah, SafeMoon is 100% a scam.
Totally a scam.
Sledge owned a scam coin for 2 seconds.
How to identify a scam in crypto. Ponzi-like tokenomics to encourage people that they're never going to sell. It's going to go to the moon. Awesome, clean, glamorous marketing videos talking about how many holders they have instead of the actual value being created on their blockchain. That's how you know it's a scam. But scams pump the hardest. It's one of the first rules of thumb in crypto. So
it's true. And that's why I also like VeChain. It's low and slow. You don't see these crazy catapults. Granted, it is up 950% since January 1st, but I like the coin, and I appreciate your input, Sledge, and I love your Snapchats. Lo sends me them all the time. They're hilarious.
I mean, I get it. I made money off VeChain in 2017. I guess I just kind of grew out of it, but I wish the best for you. I really do. I really hope fucking the CCP adopts.
Sledge owned a coin from, I think it might have had the shortest lifespan ever. Like, he literally bought it at its conception, and I watched it die on his Snap story. Like, how long was that coin around? I think it was Poo Coin, if I'm not mistaken.
A couple hours. You had to be there. Wait, what was it called again? One more time. Pug, I think. It was the first coin that Sam ever shilled.
Oh my god, what an emotional roller coaster. It pumped for a little.
I wanna get into some other opportunities while we're still on here. So I'm sure a lot of people like kinda enjoyed this and talk about like how to make the most money in crypto right now. And beyond just investing in tokens, everybody's gonna shill the bag that they own. I think a more fundamental and like actual real opportunity that you might not know about if you're just getting into crypto is getting into some of these DeFi yield farming platforms. The opportunities that are out there right now are fucking insane. I think I'm earning 1,000% APR, which you can compound daily on one pairing, and that totals out to like 1,000,000,000% per year. And then the other one is 500% APR, which totals out to about 16,000% APY per year. just for providing liquidity for certain pools on Radium. It's probably the most high upside platform you can find right now. There's all sorts of platforms that are do similar things, and basically what you're doing is providing liquidity of your tokens, providing your tokens to a decentralized exchange that people are paying fees to trade on this exchange, and you're providing the tokens that allow the automated market makers to run the decentralized trading exchange
that allows them to function. So you get a portion of the fees on that platform, and you're rewarded other ways as well, but it's a pretty safe way when you find the token that you like to earn extremely high interest on that token while it's growing in USD value at the same time.
Hang on, Connor. JP, what's up?
What, because I've seen that on my Nan, on the Ledger app. I've seen they offer something similar like that. Where else can I look into doing something like that?
Well, I would look on, if you want to get into the Solana ecosystem, which is one of the most exciting spaces right now, I would go on Raydium.io. That's R-A-Y-D-I-U-M.io. The yields are super high right now because the adoption, it's Solana ecosystem is really new. The main net launch in the last couple of months here. The user database is still pretty, like, new, and you have to have a Solana wallet with SPL tokens on it, which is, like, the Solana standard. There's, like, there's a Binance Chain standard, there's the ERC-20 Ethereum standard. So you have to get Solana tokens on there, but you can read some tutorials on how to do that. But since it's pretty new, the yields are extremely high. That's where I get both those, and the Fusion staking part on their website is where I get those yields.
I completely second that, Slater.
I just dropped the link in our Discord. JP, if you don't know how to get to our Discord, you can go to our club. It's really going to redirect you to my profile, and then you can just follow the instructions there, and pretty much any link in my social profiles will take you to our Discord, but it's in there for you.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'll check that out, because I was looking into it on the Ledger thing, but I don't know if you get as much return on Ledger.
Yeah, a lot of the bigger companies like BlockFi, Ledger, like large wallet companies, you're probably going to get like 10 to 30% APR. I mean, it's great. You can get it in really steady assets, but you got to kind of hunt for yields if you really want to, if you really want to make crazy money. And it's the fact that it's compounding interest and that you can compound it daily that is really what makes it so appetizing to really find any yields over 365%. That means you're making 1% per day. And if you compound that, that becomes like, it becomes like 100x plus in a year. So just look
at that. And there's smart contracts. Slater, there's smart contracts down there called yield aggregators where you can take your yielding tokens and stake them in there, and they're just smart contracts that'll compound your rewards every hour for you.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that existed. You got to send me a link.
Wait, what is this? So you have yielding tokens, right? And you can claim your rewards at any time and reinvest those. And that's called,
but you got to do that yourself to make it compound.
Right, you got to do it, but you can do it at any time. Like, you're literally being streamed money in these yields. Like, you can watch it, the number go up in real time. And you can claim your rewards at any time.
Have you done this?
Yes, that's what we're talking about doing.
Well, I'm in the same pools as you, Slater. And you take your rewards and you reinvest them, and it just compounds the interest, right? And then it grows faster. And so there's smart contracts out there, other projects. They're called yield aggregators. And they will do this for you every single hour.
Oh, Sledge. I am hitting you up tomorrow, brother.
Yeah. Text me.
That's money.
It's Soul Farm. It's called soulfarm.io. That's the website. You can throw it in the thing if you want.
Soulfarm.io.
Just like yeah. SOL, right?
SOL, farm.
SOL, okay.
But yeah, that's the DeFi is happening.
And really, the really amazing fundamental thesis for DeFi for me that really like hooked me on it is just thinking about the way the current banking and financial system works, which is basically that you, as a saver, as a person that has money in your savings account, are providing liquidity, which basically a bank is just an investment fund. It's just a really large investment fund that mostly operates in loans. Then they get to take all of the money that you and other people gave them, multiply it by two, and invest that in whatever markets they want to earn a yield. And they keep all the yields and charge you fees a lot of the time, or maybe pay you like 0.1% interest if you're rich. And what DeFi is doing is saying, you know what, those services, really what the bank's only real function is in the system is to decide where the capital is allocated. And that can be done in a decentralized manner, especially in the context of loans, where you can pool the risk among all the investors. And basically now the platform, which was the bank before, is making a small fee on that, but all the actual yield on the investment is going to the people that provided the liquidity. It really should have been like that all along. That's what a bank works.
But, is that like, does MetaMask do that?
MetaMask is a wallet that you can connect to. You have to have a wallet like MetaMask to use any DeFi platform. You connect to your wallet basically, and that's where the funds come from.
Okay. I need to talk to you tomorrow.
This kind of brings up like DeFi kind of was a good segue, at least one of the last things I wanted to cover, of just like what are some of the coolest use cases that y'all know about that y'all are seeing, maybe something new for blockchain that's coming out currently, or cryptocurrency in general.
I have a guilty pleasure. I don't even own the coin. I just think it's one of the coolest projects out there. It's called Numerai. They have a token, NMR. But it's just like, what it is a decentralized hedge fund. So, like, you know how all these hedge funds, right? They'll just recruit, like, aerospace engineers, like, MIT eggheads to literally just, like, engineers, right, to come in. And they'll just be like, hey, crunch these numbers. They just have a dollar sign in front of them. And they'll just run all sorts of formulas and algorithms. And just, like, it's literally, like, most of the stock market is driven by bots, is my point. They just do use, like, data science. So what this hedge fund does is publish anonymous data, and they have people like stake their token to enter this like data science tournament to where they take that data and train models on it and make predictions based on that data. And the data could be, you know, the S&P open, high, low, close for the last, you know, 2 months, or the Bitcoin, or the price of Bitcoin over the last 2 months. But they don't know that. They're just running models on anonymous data and submitting predictions, and they get paid out based on their performance in Ethereum. And so they call it the hardest data science tournament in the world. That's how they market it as. But they literally have, like, anyone with an internet connection train models on their publicly published data and then submit predictions based on their models and get rewarded accordingly.
Wow.
And do the holders see the returns that whatever the winning model generates?
Yeah, the token, like, in theory, gains value because you need the token to stake to enter the tournament. So I guess as the tournament becomes more profitable, there's more demand for the NMR token to stake to, like, enter and get winnings. So gotcha. I think that's how the value of the token's tied to it. But
that's just a cool, super cool concept, yeah.
Yeah, just a cool concept.
Have you guys heard of Brain Wallets?
I am not.
I was just trying to field the group because I was in a like crypto room on Clubhouse, and they were talking about Brain Wallets, and they sent an article called Call Me Ishmael, and I read it, and this stuff makes no sense to me at all. And I you know, consider myself pretty privy to information about crypto. I love the space, super passionate about it. And this is way over my head. So if you guys want to check that out in the Discord, I posted it on May 4th in the zoo. Apparently, Brain Wallets came out last year, and they were supposed to be super safe, and they ended up not being safe at all. So if anybody has any insight on that, let me know.
A memorized private key? What?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird.
Huh. Yeah, I'm looking at Gemini.com. They have an article on it right now that I'm reading. I've never heard of this.
What is a brain wallet?
It's a type of crypto cold storage in the form of a memorized private key or seed phrase. Originally, a brain wallet was a hexadecimal string. Now brain wallets can be stored as a sequence of 12 to 24 words, often called a mnemonic. While they draw interest and fascination, the consensus opinion is that the storage method for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies is not a secure or practical option.
So that's just like the storage method for literally every crypto wallet. So I'm interested to hear what the argument is there, because that's literally how they all work. That's how you create a wallet. If you like use like a MetaMask or Binance Chain or any of them, you get a 12 or 24 seed phrase.
Right.
In your wallet. So what's the argument for it not being safe?
It says that the funds get swept away. You got to read Call Me Ishmael. Like the fund, like something happened where the funds are swept away in 67 seconds. It's like basically an argument for the exchanges that they're technically safer than cold storage, based on your own user failure, right? Like that guy who couldn't remember his Bitcoin passwords, which was basically the 12 phrases. And then if somebody gets into your cold storage, all your shit's gone immediately.
Yeah. It's, and if you forget your key, then you're toast also. That's, right. That's the, one of the other risks, but it's for, the use case is specifically, it sounds like for people who are almost in like refugee status, where like they might have cryptocurrency to their name, but if they were to leave the country, and get caught leaving the country, people might take all their assets while they leave the country, or I don't know what the exact case is, I'm just reading it right now, but it sounds pretty, complicated. It's I wouldn't trust myself to remember a key, especially a crypto key like that. You know, you might have better use. Maybe we can make like a national treasure-esque wallet where it's just like a treasure hunt if we ever forget our key, and then you know you try your best to memorize it.
It's funny. I just write it down. I don't feel like it's very concerning.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's funny Mike brings up the national treasure thing because I picture in like 30 to 40 years, these lost crypto vaults, people are going to like figure out ways to get into that and like crypto hunt. You know how much Bitcoin's been lost to nothingness?
Yeah. And I honestly, I'm selfishly praying for it because we've got 4 million of the Bitcoin supply that's gone forever. Out of that 21 million max, 18 and change million that's been mined, the less of that that continues to exist, the more valuable ours should inherently become. So if people want to lose like 2 more million Bitcoin, I'm here for it. Just hopefully it's not mine. All right, any other cool use cases that we found for blockchain recently?
I think I gotta go, guys. Make some dinner here and work on a couple things before bed. But it's been an awesome discussion.
Great discussion. Yeah, always love talking crypto. If anyone else has anything they want to add, we can continue. Otherwise, we will head to Discord where we do our post clubhouse coffee side chat. The coffee room, we call it. Where we're basically going to talk about, we're going to wrap up this episode, talk about next week's episode, which is, what's next week's episode, Connor? It's Disney. So if anyone knows anything about Walt Disney and a lot of the, well, obviously it's just called Disney, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, Walt Disney is where it starts, and it's going to go through everything they've created in the past 100 years. There's a lot of cool stuff to dive into. So that'll be next week's episode. We'll talk about that a little bit, and then we'll talk about future week's topics that we want to propose as well.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All right, fellas, always a pleasure. JP, great meeting you, my friend. Nick, thank you for joining us as well. Tobin, Mark, Travis, Tommy, Connor, always a pleasure, my friends. Schwartzy, love you, my man. Love seeing you in the clubhouse. Edric, great seeing you here for the first time. And Kevin, my man, thank you for coming as well. Tommy, also thanks for being our go-to NFT guy. I know Mark tried to steal your shine there, but you held down the fort pretty well.
Yeah, I'm better than him at selling and making money off NFTs and NCAA football, so.
All right, fellas. Well, I will talk to y'all in the clubhouse, and I will see y'all next week.
See ya. Later, everybody.